So thank you, Michelle. If anybody has any dog or knows of a dog that you would like to do a consult with next week, I'd love to hear about it. Be nice if it could be a medium-sized dog. So we have different dog sizes instead of just only small dogs. Okay. That's quite a ways to come up here. Yeah, so. Okay, so when you're trying to figure out what's going on with the dog, observation is really important. What is a dog's response to the environment, the sights and sounds and smells of the environment? What is the owner's take on the responses to the environment? Because that's going to be really important. What happens when a human being makes direct eye contact? As I was talking about last week, the kind of eye contact with a fearful dog, particularly a fearfully aggressive dog, can be really problematic because if you do strong eye contact, they get upset and they want to bite you. And if you don't do any eye contact at all, they get upset and they want to bite you. There's a real finite amount of time where you can make eye contact where it's not challenging, but it still tells the dog that you're acknowledging them. I think one of the biggest problems that I've seen lately, or I've thought about lately, are dogs that really like to be acknowledged, but are fearful. Mm-hmm. And you know, if you've ever seen that, you know, where you come, somebody comes to the home or whatever, and the dogs really want to meet the person, but they're very afraid of them. So they have this curiosity, and if you don't respond to them, they get upset and angry with you. But if you over-respond, then they can't cope with it. And I've seen that now several times. I'm not exactly sure how to deal with it because so much of cool, calm greetings involves the dog being able to approach you at their own terms, underneath the table or whatever. And yet, in that case, you're not really acknowledging the dog. So there just has to be kind of a... So with the German Shepherd, for instance, she was really curious. She wanted to greet me and wanted to meet me, but she was afraid of me, so I had to be sitting down because if I was standing up, then she started to bark at me. So I sat down, and then when she started to interact with me, I actually looked at her and smiled a little bit, but I was afraid to do it too much because I didn't want her to take offense. And I'm not sure where else to go with that. Aspen? You can't do that. She says, "Oh, damn, I have that hair." So anybody have any ideas about that? What do you do? Trisha, what do you do if you have meet dogs like that?
I wasn't listening to you, I'm sorry.
She was watching a man yell.
She was thinking about other things. This would be a dog that really wants to greet you, but is fearful, but really likes that interaction of greeting. Is there something that you've done that is?
Oh well, I would sit quietly and not make eye contact and let the dog.
Yeah, but then some of them get really demanding about greeting. At least this is what I've seen. Anybody else ever seen that? Maybe it's just me. All right, it's my problem. Yeah. Kind of look around them as opposed to at them. Yeah.
So like look, you know, I might make eye contact for a brief second and then look at their jawline or their chest or their paws or their ears or somewhere that's not like...
Yeah. Because if they're not fearful, you can toss a treat and then they come back and you can toss a treat. But if they're really fearful, then they're not going to go get the treat. Yeah. So you always have this problem. But yeah, I mean, most of the time I just sit down and wait for the dog to come up to me and then... When the dog has actually put his head right here, then I might get the eye contact for a half a second. But it is tough. I mean, it's kind of, they have rules that we don't know. And that if you do something that they don't like, they might bite you. Because a dog that's fearfully cautious wants to come up and visit with you, but they don't want to, They don't want to feel intimidated, and they might bite you if there's an issue, right? So you're constantly trying to tread lightly in something like that. And for some dogs, it's much worse than others. Yeah?
When you say that a dog might want to bite you if you don't do direct eye contact, do you think is that coming from because they're not feeling acknowledged? Or?
Oh, well, actually, I think that they feel, there's a little bully in all of us, right? And I think that if a dog feels that you're of such a pushover that you're not even going to do any direct eye contact, particularly if you lower your head and lower your eyes and don't do eye contact, then that emboldens them. And you don't want them emboldened. What you want is for them to actually retain their thoughtfulness and to be able to greet you. But honestly, it's really funny. It's like a test, You never seen that?
No, I have. As
to why that might, this is all speculation, obviously. This is just the world according to me, But it just makes sense to me. Yeah.
So this is where you were talking about last week with when you turn your head away from the dog, but you don't go like this.
Right.
It's the same thing that you're talking about. You don't give them that like, oh my God, I'm afraid of you signal.
Right.
You just give them a respectful signal.
Yeah, just a little bit, but you have to do a little bit of eye contact.
Yeah.
Just a little bit of eye contact. Because if you don't, then it would be really weird even for a person who's shy to meet somebody and to do a little, no eye contact at all. Hi, how are you?
Would it look to the dog like you're, well, obviously you know what the dog would think, but if you're doing, how they do kind of the whale eye,
You mean that sideways look?
Yeah, when they kind of go like this, but it's like, big.
Well, then they're stiff. Then they're scared. And if you do the same thing, I would assume that they would read that as being afraid.
Right.
Yeah. Because, it seems like they would be reading the same kind of body language in us as we read in them.
Yeah. But then you have to try to stay relaxed, and also you need to keep a peripheral eye on them anyway, because you have to know what their intention is.
Right.
Yeah.
So you don't want to, because you could, there could be people who would be afraid.
I have seen people who greet dogs and they're like this, and it looks so fearful. And those dogs do get emboldened, and they come up and they do a lot of investigation. And then if you jerk back, then they go, that little snap.
What's that story of the Great Dane you told us? I don't know if it was a dog walker owner, but didn't live with the dog for the interaction with treats, and then subsequently got bitten several places.
Yeah. That was, let me see.
That was a former volunteer. And the dog, that's different. That's a dog that's very, very demanding and confident. And if you stop giving into their demands, they're going to insist.
And actually, that's a really, really good point. Because we people who give treats, a lot of treats, you fall into that trap. You give so many treats that the dog gets like Aspen. Going, I need treats, I need treats, I need treats. Only she would never get aggressive, but some dogs actually get aggressive. And the healer that I saw this week that I was talking about, that's what I'm afraid is going to happen to him or her. Because she's so carrot-driven that she starts to come up and she looks at you like this, like, give me a carrot. I want the carrot. Yes, I'm afraid of you, but I really want the carrot. And so if you don't give it to her, she's probably going to get more aggressive with you. And I think, probably especially dog walkers, you may have seen this, but I think that this happens quite a bit when the dog is like, no, I need this. You've showed yourself to be a Pez machine, so by golly, I need those treats.
See, that's the interesting part about dog tech. They teach you all the time, treat, 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 treat.
At dog tech?
Yeah, dog tech. You never want to run out of treats. All the time.
I think it depends. I think some of that is when you're doing kind of the classical conditioning and the dog has been fearful of other dogs. So when the dog has learned the behavior of looking at you, getting a treat, and then they're not reacting, to me it's a lot of that because they have the whole kind of module of the project dog and the dogs who are fearful of other dogs or teaching you to read basic body language. I think some of it is that where they are like...
Well, that there is a school of thought, which is that you do constant treats.
Mm-hmm.
There are people who like to do that. I personally think you want to get away from that as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. You don't want to have the dog constantly be thinking that every time they want a treat, they get a treat. Yeah.
Many dogs with nature of demanding everything from you. Mm-hmm. And you can see them sometimes in class when a person comes to class and they're new at this and they're being treats and they stop and the dog starts actually grabbing at their arm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. That to me is a big flag. And I don't think there are that many dogs that fit the picture. Although
I don't know. I think there are more now than there used to be. Yeah. My personal feeling about teaching a dog to walk on leash, for instance, is to have a treat there so they have anticipation that they're going to get it, but they don't constantly get treats. And yet there are people who teach like this,
yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And they're just teaching walking, treating, which I personally think is GPS learning.
Yeah.
I don't think they're learning.
Right.
I think they're just eating treats and walking, you know? So if you ask them to do it without the treat, they don't know what you're talking about, you know? So if a dog got used to that, then they could easily do what Tricia was talking about and start climbing up your back or your arm or going, no, you're supposed to be giving me this. Because the absence of a reward, this is negative punishment, can be more powerful than positive punishment. When you expect something and it doesn't happen, that's more powerful of a punishment than actually getting something added. Like so if you tell a little kid you're going to go to the movies and get an ice cream and then it starts to rain, you say we're not going to go, they're going to get really upset. That has just taken it's turned their world upside down. And we really don't want our dogs to get into that kind of position where they're thinking that the absence of something that is expected that they were going to get is going to go away, and therefore they're going to get angry. Because that's what I think it does. It actually turns into hostility.
So how do you deal with that then? Would you switch from treats to clicker, do more intermittent so they don't know when it's coming?
I'd do way more intermittent.
Okay.
Yeah,
Just stop.
I don't think the clicker would make the slightest bit of difference.
I was just thinking that it'd be something like other than
Yes.
As a reinforcer, and I would have treats off my person.
Yes.
Maybe mm-hmm. over there somewhere, and
okay.
I'll walk over and get you a treat.
Okay.
But they're not on my body.
Okay. If you have hold of the treat, if you have hold of the treat and you're not giving it to them, then is that encouraging them to potentially jump up?
No, not necessarily, because then you could be teaching the dog that I have it and you earn it. Yeah, and it's always interesting, you know, when I'm working with clients and I use a treat bag, and I'm a pretty generous trainer, but our dogs never jump up for treats. They never expect a treat when it's in our hands or anything like that. They know that it will come when it comes, and it's just going to happen. So you would be teaching the dog that, no, it's mine to have, yours to earn. These are what we're doing here. Yeah, but I mean...
What so often happens is, especially the game person, when the dog jumps up, that's when the dog is the treat. So they're reinforcing.
Yeah, right. Because they're actually getting rewarded for jumping.
Right. And I think that happens all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
Now, with this, instead of the aggressive, fearful dog, like the submissive, fearful dog, when I own that one, I'd always have people come in and throw treats at him, and he'd get so close and have them completely not look. They would turn their head because
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't, or else he'd pee, and that was a 160-pound dog peeing.
The lion peeing in your
yes,
living room. Yeah.
Exactly. And so, but it's interesting what you said of not looking.
Well, here's the other thing you can get with this kind of thing. So you have people come and actively not look, but you have them toss the treat, which is a fine thing because the dog will start to experiment to figure out where you are and whatnot. But at some point, you're going to have them just glance.
Okay?
Because otherwise, it's just going to be some kind of a strange treats from the sky machine. Right? But they have to understand that there's a contingency here, that this is coming from somebody and that the people are not... you know, awful. That's one of the reasons why I really like the dining room table scenario. Because if they're sitting at a dining room table, they can glance over and toss the treat and then look back again. As opposed to sitting on a couch where the dog is going like that, coming back again, and they're actively having to look away in order to not look at the dog. So my dining room table scenario actually what that is manipulating humans. Right? It's manipulating where people look. It's like, I was working with a really fearful, this was a long, long time ago, but working with a really fearful Chesapeake Bay Retriever, and the dog would bite people at the door. And so he was ADR, so he would come directly at the door and he'd bite their hand on the way in. And so, you know, you can't not look at something that's going to be, you know, oh yeah, it's okay. He's biting me, that's all fine. So what I did is I manipulated the people. And the way I manipulated the people was I had asked the guy to put a whole bunch of balls out right outside his door, tennis balls. And they'd walk in bouncing the ball and then toss the ball. He'd go get the ball, bring it back, and they were an instant friend. Because he was so ball-focused that if you had a ball, that meant that you were a bud. And it worked really well. In fact, the last I heard from him, again, a long time ago, was that the only behavior problem he had now was that there was a whole bunch of really wet balls all over the house. That's not a bad problem to have because, you know, and he'd actually gone to, he had quarantined the dog down south at his mother's house in Los Angeles, and he'd had that guy, who's the guy who says he's the dog turner to the stars?
Not Caesar.
This was before Caesar. But there was a guy who called himself the dog trainer to the stars, and the guy was, you know, said he was going to fix the dog and ended up charging like $2,000 and didn't do anything at all. Kept taking him to.
That's the guy that goes to the car and scares the hell out of the dog. He goes up to the car.
Yeah,
and the
right,
dog
that guy.
The car, just to try to get the dog to react.
Yeah, that guy. Yeah, so anyway, it didn't work. So, but the ball trick worked. So, you know, but that had to do with not having direct eye contact, because it's indirect eye contact that actually manipulated both the dog and the human into thinking that good things were going to happen. And they did happen. So it actually worked really well. So then some of the stuff that we talked about with Michelle a little bit, you know, what is a dog like when he or she is in a comfortable area? What is this dog like when she is comfortable? It is really important to know that, to understand the difference between when the dog is comfortable and when the dog is uncomfortable. Does she have allergies or problems with digestion? How long does it take her to get to an agitated, fearful state? Is it instantaneous? How long does it take to get away from that agitated, fearful scent? Does it easy come, easy go, or is it a long time up bat and then slow, you know, return to normal? Can she respond to a behavior cue, like sit or something that's really, really simple? And I very much like touch. I think touch is such an easy thing to teach, and for fearful dogs, it's probably the easiest, and yet it teaches proximity, so it's a really nice one. If the dogs are really slow to respond, then it's likely that there's some fear in there, or if the dog obviously doesn't respond at all. What about eye contact? Are there dilated pupils? Does the dog looking at the person? Is the dog looking through the person? I would say that the Jim, the dog we talked about at the very beginning, he never made eye contact with me. He absolutely wasn't going to do that at all. And is the dog dangerous? And with some fearful dogs, yes, they are dangerous, as we know, you know. So then you try to talk about the origins of the fearful behavior, just mostly, well, I was going to say mostly because people want to do it, but I think everybody wants to know. Was the dog fearful as a puppy? Is there a history of trauma? Inappropriate living conditions? Any chance that pain is involved? Remember we talked about that whole thing with Isla, the dog that was aggressive because she was in pain. Is the condition chronic, episodic, or intermittent? And in the case of Michelle, your dog, it's chronic, right? In the case of Flacca, it's chronic. So, but if it's episodic or intermittent, then we can actually change circumstances. And if you change circumstances, then you can change the behavior of the dog. So you need to know that. And what has been tried and what has been successful or unsuccessful in modifying behavior. And we were talking before class about how people just, you know, you see somebody who's got a dog that's barking or several dogs that are barking, and the owners are going, shut up, stop it, don't. You know, and they're really yelling at the dog as though the dog knows that they're not supposed to be doing this. And that is probably the most people's first thing that they do, is to try to stop the dog from doing that. I think she likes it up here. What has the owner done in response? And how long have they kept to one method? That's a new one for me. I've often asked what they've done, but many times people will try something for 2 or 3 days and then go, oh, this doesn't work. And the thing is, sometimes they're right. Sometimes if you try something for 2 or 3 days and you go, this is not working at all, that's a reasonable thing to do. So, but it, sometimes they just don't try for long enough. So, you know, for her or for him, you're talking about a year. And that's going to be fine. You know, that actually is what you need. And then, is the family on the same page? That is kind of a big one. It's like the German Shepherd with the husband who was very soft and the woman who was like traditionally, I keep telling him he's got to be alpha, that kind of thing. And the guy goes, and I'm not alpha. I'm like, okay, let's take the term alpha out of it. And we can work at it a different way. Because when you have different people with different techniques and they both handle the dog, then you've got problems. If only she was handling that dog, it would be fine. But he was the guy who went for walks with the dog. So he was the guy getting into trouble. Yeah.
When you're talking about puppy behavior, I mean, I understand, like, if it's a fearful or a very shy puppy, but what if you have a puppy that's more kind of, it's very friendly, but let's say they meet another dog and they're super, they do all these, like, muzzle licking, they're very, like, you know, trying to be very overly friendly. They kind of see another dog, they really want to meet all these dogs, but then they instantly start doing all these appeasement behaviors with the other dog. So what do you, can that turn
into? Some kind of instant submission?
Instant submission.
So,
yeah.
So this one.
Muzzle licking, ears back, making themselves low.
Okay, so that dog is actually very social.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Not fearful at all. But they're trying to make friends by being very. So what do you do with that?
Yeah, so I mean, can that turn into fear or anxiety?
You bet. You want to talk about that? She had a golden retriever, a female golden retriever who did that. She used to flip over to meet people,
exactly.
Meet other dogs.
Like
just every time, flip over.
Yeah.
And she became aggressive.
So I'm curious about
that. Yeah, and
yeah.
We think
she
it
just,
was probably single event learning.
Yeah. I mean, and it was because the one time that she did it out of all those times that another dog didn't get, that another dog came in and said, oh, you're doing this and I mind you, and then she freaked out, and then after that, she was like, oh, any dog that come, if a dog, she'd be fine if they didn't come near her. She never went.
So she was really.
She stopped flipping at that point.
Yeah.
And then was like, I'll put you down.
Yeah, so she really did overreact.
Yeah.
So, Mike, is this your dog?
This is Fiona.
Get her out of that. Call her, good girl.
Yeah.
You don't do anything nasty about it, but
oh, no.
I would not recommend it because a lot of dogs don't have a clue how to meet a dog that's flipping over.
And so she's met a lot of really nice dogs. She hasn't had any incidents where the dogs are mean with her or anything, but she just instantly is just like, oh my God, I'm so friendly, you know, just instant. And she's really such a sweet dog.
Keep
just
walking.
Okay. Well, she doesn't get to meet every dog. Like, we go places.
Yeah, but you keep walking even if she's meeting them. Come on, sweetie, let's go.
Okay.
Let's keep on going. Oh, what a good girl.
Sometimes
yeah.
Sometimes we'll actually target her really soon.
Yeah.
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 We see that at the daycare a lot. We have to watch the really social but really submissive inside dogs. They're excited and friendly, but then the other dogs are usually okay for like a minute.
They don't.
And
get
then they start picking on that dog.
Yeah.
So we have to really watch those, we call them like the victim when they do it.
Yeah.
They get too friendly and then they
okay.
Over and they're
okay.
Yeah, that was a good question because it definitely
yeah,
is.
I worry about it.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm skipping ahead a few slides because we already talked about stuff. Just to reiterate though that there's ADR and PDR. Are you saying something? Oh, talking to her. Okay, she's saying hello to Flock over there. Okay, so ADR is active defense reflex. That's a dog when he feels stressed is going to go towards the threat. PDR is a dog that's passive defense reflex. If they feel stressed, they're going to try to run away. We like PDR. We would prefer that the dog would actually try to avoid the problem rather than to antagonize, but it's just the way they are, and that's the way they are. Yay, she did it. So ADR dogs have a tendency to be very territorial in the home because they are in their place, their comfort zone. That's where they want to be, and they want to protect that. So they oftentimes bond very, 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 very strongly with the first people that they are living with. They do not like anybody else. They sometimes do not accept other dogs. They're really, and anybody else that comes into the house or yard is perceived as a threat, and they will try to drive them away. And they will do that with anybody, any other species, you know, doesn't matter. Sometimes they'll do it with boxes. Whereas a PDR dog, if you put a box in the house, they'll try to hide from it. Right? But an ADR will go after it. And those are the dogs that will be comfortable with the stranger once the stranger is in and settled until the stranger moves, and then they want to go and get them and bite their ankle or whatever.
The ADR dogs.
Yeah. So this is a guy, this is from a long time ago. And he was, they'd only had this dog.
He's a good boy.
No, I'm not.
Sit.
So the guy was really confused because the dog's tail was wagging. But you can see he's got the and stay out by his bark, you know. The, so watch when I stand up.
He's a good boy. He's a good boy. I'm natural.
Got a terrible name. Natural?
Come on, natural. Come on. Come on, sweetie. Come on, natural. Come on, sweetie.
To see where he's standing, kind of in between his owner's legs. You can see it's fearful. Okay, I'm gonna relax now because you are staying and I was staying in one place.
Poor baby. Yeah.
Until I move. So then I had him give me the dog. And look at his tail. Doesn't he look like a little pig?
Come on, let's go. Oh, good boy. Come on. That's a good boy. Good boy, Mojo. Good boy. Come on.
So he had two names, Natural and Mojo. I think Natural is what he came with when they were changing
his attitude. Yeah, there's a good boy.
So he's not biting me, is he? I mean, you can't be with the one you love.
What? Come on, bud. Hi, God. How you doing, sweet pea? Hey, Papa. Hey, hi there.
So this
hi.
Is one of the interesting things about this.
Hi.
Is the fact that when he was with a stranger, with me, he could meet strangers. It was when he was with his owner that he couldn't meet strangers.
All right, get
it. Here comes the owner.
Why don't you come on over here and sit down? Okay, Martin, give me a minute. Okay.
So what I wanted to find out is could he meet a stranger? Sorry about this. Could he meet a stranger after the I had him? And he did a lot better.
Margie, we can really tell how wonderful you are. Trying to go away.
But we still have that. I have to see if I can find a better video of that. So he was interesting, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And so he was obviously afraid. He was he was obviously very, very strongly bonded. Just his history, as a matter of interest, was that he had been raised by a breeder of minis, mini bull terriers, and actually regular sized bull terriers as well. Up in Washington area and on a farm. The owner, I believe, was a veterinarian. And so she bred these dogs. He was kept until he was 9 months old because she thought he might be show quality, which it turned out he was not show quality. So then she found a home for him. And this was the home. The issues were that the dog had already bitten a friend of theirs who had come into the house, which was kind of a big deal, obviously. And they lived in Chinatown in San Francisco, which is not a really good place for a dog that's got this amount of fear. So the owner, the breeder, had said that he had been very well socialized because there were some neighborhood kids that came over all the time and played with him. And of course, he was socialized to dogs because she had a bunch of other dogs. So is this the amount of socialization you need? No. I mean, just because there's two kids that come over doesn't mean he thinks he's going to be okay with all kids. And just because he knows what bull terriers look like doesn't mean he's going to know what other dogs look like. So it was not adequate, and he was well past his socialization period by the time they got him. They also were expecting a baby, so they were really worried that his behavior might be bad around the baby. And what's interesting to me now in retrospect is if I'd been seeing them now, I would have worked with them. Then my recommendation was that they send him back to the breeder. Because of where they lived, what they expected, who they, the fact that they were going to have a baby and all that kind of stuff. And they were very willing to send it back to the breeder, but the breeder then said that if they had neutered him. And she said, well, all I'll do is when I get him back, I'm just going to euthanize him because he's no good to me. So the last I heard, which was a few years ago, this was several years ago, so a few years after this, he was living in San Francisco, and they just muzzled him all the time. Mm-hmm. So he'd actually, he'd stayed living with them. So it is an interesting thing because he was not good for their family. It wasn't he was a bad dog; he just was badly socialized, and he had a lot of fear in his makeup. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's changed your mind from then to now?
Because I do so many more home visits, and I see dogs that are worse than this.
Okay.
I didn't think he was actively dangerous. I was not recommending euthanasia. I did not think he was going to be, but I did think that this was a bad placement, and I still think it was a bad placement, and I probably still would say it would be a good idea for you to think about rehoming to returning the dog. But if they decided not to, I probably would have continued to work with him because I think that he probably could get way better. Not perfect by any means, but better. On the other hand, I wasn't willing to go into downtown San Francisco and work with them. Which is where they need. Oh, that's right. The most awful thing about him was that he really didn't like Asian people. And they're living in Chinatown in San Francisco. So presumably these were just some of the people that he had not been socialized with. So he was he wasn't used to them or anything. Kind of really fascinating. So, but that's what ADR in the home looks like and whatnot. Okay, so I was going to talk about modification. Yeah, so it's going in the wrong spot. So next week, I want to talk a lot about different kinds of modification techniques, all of the ones that you use for anxiety and fear. And I'm going to include the one from Denise McLeod, the turn in face. I talked to her and she said I could use her video, which is great. So that's on one of the methods that we're going to use. I would like to use do a dog if we can do a dog. Maybe if that German Shepherd is there, we'll do that. I don't know. but those are what I'm planning on doing next week. So just to talk about what you always do when you're trying to modify behavior is, first of all, you try to reduce the number of incidences. And this can be very difficult if it's something that is fear-based on the street. So if the dog is really afraid of other dogs or afraid of people on the street, then you're going for walks with the dog, then it's hard to reduce the incidence until unless you become a member of the Midnight Walkers Club, right? Because you can't walk at any other time.
Even then, it's not great sometimes, especially in the summertime.
In the summertime and in the evening, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Luke, who's got reactivity issues, I mean, he changed our lives, you know. And I think that when you have reactive dogs, they change your lives. And you have to decide that you're willing to work with it, you know, and you'll do it. Because it's sometimes it's never a change for the better. So taking a hiatus from training, and even taking a hiatus from a lot of walks if you happen to have a yard, might be a good idea. So for instance, if you had a dog that was very reactive and very fearful, even non-reactive, just terrified on going on walks, what good is it going on walks? Is the dog having a good time on the walk? Probably not. Are they even investigating? Maybe, maybe not. So you either come up with a walk that the dog can be comfortable on, or you take a hiatus and see if you can find an exercise in some other ways. Yes, they do need to exercise, but they also, in fact, I think one of my clients a couple of weeks ago or whatever, I said, you know, she was worried about him not getting enough exercise and not having, you know, losing muscle tone. And I said, let's work on this first. Let's work on the muscle tone second. See what we can get first with this other stuff. So, and as I said, I think there have been a couple studies now which have shown that if, you know, that taking a hiatus is a good idea if you're going to do this.
It's really hard to get people to do that, though.
I know. Well, we've been fed this whole, they need exercise, exercise, exercise. And they do need exercise. I mean, you are.
But people don't realize that the emotional and mental strain on these dogs is so huge. They're thinking, oh, we got to get them out. And sometimes people will exercise these dogs for many hours.
Oh, yes.
And then the dog, it can never calm down.
Yeah.
Constantly. And they really fight not walking their dog.
Well, one of the problems with exercise is that a lot of times they'll give them an exercise and then they come home and they expect the dog to relax immediately. And the dogs actually need cool down time. So they actually need maybe a walk or slow down towards the end or something so the dog can actually cool down. And you will increase anxiety if you take your dog for a really energetic walk or run and then leave them immediately to go to work. You'll actually cause more behavior problems than you'll solve because the dog is going to start ripping the house apart because they've got too much energy. You know, the more exercise you give a dog, the more they need. It is one of those things that just keeps going and going and going. And so you have to be somewhat careful with that. So reducing stimuli is easy for me to say. It may not be easy for the dog to do. So, you know, how many people come to your house? What does the dog do when maybe you have a lot of Amazon.com deliveries. And every time that happens, the dog starts going ballistic and crazy. So I usually will use management for something like that. One client, I recommended that they put, well, a couple of them actually, recommended they put a box that right inside their property, but so the dog couldn't get to it, so that the dog didn't know when the mail was coming, and they didn't know when the packages were coming, so they didn't go nuts 2, 3, 4 times a day. It's kind of a good thing to do, right? So we cut down some of that stimulation. Anything you can do to cut down stimulation is a good idea because you want to put all the stimulation under your control, not under the environment's control. If you can't control the environment, it's really hard to start solving behavior problems. And then trying not to expose the dog to things that scare him. There are a bunch of trainers who really think you should make the dog face his fears. There are a bunch of people who think that you need to make children and dogs face their fears. And I'm not one of them. I think that the way you learn how to face your fears is to go slower and not to be inundated in it. So it's not that they eventually don't have to face their fears. It's just going to be a really slow process rather than a really fast process. Which is one reason why I think, like, with small dogs, picking them up is fine. Turning them so their little heads back here is fine. So what you're doing is just saying, I've gotcha. You know, and then eventually you're going to learn that the thing that was scaring you is not going to scare you. But just putting the dog in a position where they're not constantly exposed is a really good one. So I think we'll stop there. And yes?
Can I just say, this is one of the biggest problems that you were saying people want to respond to the dog's reaction, so they want it to happen and then respond to it rather than preventing it. And I even tell people with house training puppies, prevention is going to get you a house training puppy way faster than catching him in the act and talking that kind of stuff. But people want to say, catch him in the act and tell them, I'm not going to. And the same with the behavior, like with the reactive dog, you want to see it react and then do something as though they're actively helping the dog to, as opposed to letting them, I mean, and probably the best thing is not to let them practice the behavior to prevent it.
Yeah, but there you are. You're fighting human nature.
I know.
And you know and in fact, I was just talking on the phone with somebody the other day who was saying, well, every time he does this, I can't even remember what it does. Then we tell him that he shouldn't do it. We could get mad at him. I think it was probably just something like counter surfing or whatever. And I said, so what happens to the next day? Does he keep on counter surfing? Well, yeah, but now he's hiding it. So because he knows there's a consequence to the behavior. So he gets sorry. Oh, that was what it was. He gets really sorry. If he does it, then he squints and he drops down and he gets really sorry, but he does it again the next day. You know, and then he squints and he gets sorry again. And you actually get this with dogs that are reactive on leash, where they go bark, bark, lunge, lunge, ooh. You know, because they know the consequence to doing it is that there's going to be a leash pop or whatever it might be, but they still can't help themselves. And certainly, in the case of fearful animals, they really can't help themselves. They're going completely reflexively, and you're trying to say, I don't like that behavior, which I guess is something I have against the behaviorists who say it's not the motivation, it's the behavior. No, it's the motivation, it's the cause. That's you can't just control a behavior and expect the dog's emotions to control.
I know a lot of people who use the water bottle when you think of them, let's say the dog is counter surfing and they go...
Oh, water bottles for counter surfing? That doesn't bother me. Because as long as you've taught them you don't like it, you know, you tell them no. So then the consequence is that you get a water bottle. Of course, what you get is a dog that goes, where's the water bottle?
Yeah. Or you're not here.
Yeah. You're not here. No, water bottles are... I mean, there are consequences that are slightly aversive that I have no problem with whatsoever. I don't like shake cans. A lot of people like shake hands. I don't like shake hands. I think they cause trauma, but that's just my personal feeling.
You know, Trish, I think it's like we're talking about before class, where you have this whole mentality about dogs.
Yeah.
It's so ingrained in the culture that people are just like, that's not going to work. You've got to teach this dog.
You got to find the behaviors, identify the behavior, and then deal with that behavior.
That's a hard fight.
Yeah, it is. And there's a real cultural bias against it. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. See you next week.